Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Hello everyone and welcome to The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times, and we're on location today, standing in the stands at Twickenham, very sunny, sunglasses on, there's a few easy jet planes going above us and all that. It's a nice scene, and we're here because England are announcing their World Cup squad. I'm here with Alex Lowe, rugby correspondent of The Times.
Hello, William.
And I'm here with Stephen Jones, rugby correspondent of The Sunday Times.
Will, other airlines are available.
Looking around, there's British Airways logos literally everywhere you look.
Haven't quite named it British Airways Twickenham yet, unlike Scottish Gas Murrayfield, which I think we're all going to have to refer to
as
now. It's a massive slogan on the roof.
But anyway, lads, so the reason we're here, as we said, is that Steve Borthwick is confirming his 33-man squad for the Rugby World Cup today. This is Monday, for all of you listening on different days. A few surprises. Should we start absolutely right at the top? The big omission that we broke the news on Sunday night, Sunday lunchtime, really, Henry Slade dropped. Joe Marchant in. I'll tell you what, we'll run through the full 33 and then we'll start discussing and sort of how we came to the story.
In New Zealand, they got Richie McCaw to do this.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, to announce the All Blacks squad.
I'm not going to do the accent.
We've got Will Kelleher to announce the England squad.
So, your 33-man England squad.
Your
at least Will Kelleher has always been on side.
So, we'll start forwards and then go to the back. So, Ellis Gens, Joe Marler, Bevan Rodd, Jamie George, Jack Walker, Theo Dan, Kyle Sinclair, Dan Cole, Will Stewart, Mara Toji, Ollie Chessam, George Martin, David Ribbons, Courtney Laws, Lewis Ludlam, Tom Curry, Jack Willis, Ben Earl, Billy Vunipola. And in the backs, Ben Youngs, Danny Kerr, Jack Van Portfleet, Owen Farrell, George Ford, Marcus Smith, Manu Tuilagi, Ollie Lawrence, Joe Marchant, Anthony Watson, Elliot Daly, Max Malins, Henry Arundel, and Freddie Stewart. So, as the Times revealed on Sunday, Henry Slade not being picked. Now, should we start, Alex, by explaining to the readers how we came about that, or the process of trying
Inside
to get that story?
Inside story of how we broke the squad. Yeah, well, it was... So, last week's pod was us selecting what, as a collective, we might have picked. It's a conversation that's dominated all our thoughts for weeks, really, trying to understand the balance, 19 forwards or 18 forwards.
We actually picked 20 by mistake last week.
Friday night in Cardiff, Saturday night in Cardiff, it's all that anyone was really talking about. And then Sunday morning, we jump on the 9:30 train from Cardiff, and a member of the England squad jumped on the same train in a different carriage, which told us that all the breakfast meetings that Steve Borthwick was having with the players to explain whether they were in or out of the squad had happened, and they'd all dispersed for their weekend or their 24 hours at home. So we were on the train on the way back to London trying to find out who had been told they were in and who had been told they were out. And with something like this, you absolutely have to be right. You can't you can't be taking flyers on a story as big and important as Henry Slade being dropped from England. So we were checking and double checking, and I got off the train at Paddington and got on the tube. And while we're trying to check, we're also trying to write some copy so that when we actually have it now, we can get it published. And I was so distracted by all this, I got on the tube going the wrong direction. So 15 minutes I travelled in the wrong direction with my head down, trying to sort of nail this discussion, nail this story. You look up and I'm in totally the wrong way, get back on it, and it was all quite a sort of exhilarating, adrenaline fueled experience. Quite stressy as well.
It's stressful as
because
well, yeah.
you don't want to get it wrong, but there's a real joy in getting it right. It's what we do.
Yeah. But you could have ended up embarking as well.
Honestly, if I hadn't lifted my head, I would have been. Yeah. I genuinely was going, so in 15 minutes, going in the wrong direction. So there you go. The story was brought to you from the...
Trains, planes, automobiles
on the way back from Cardiff.
So should we talk about the Slade mission? Because I think that's the one that will have tongues wagging. And we'll get onto a few others as well. But around Cardiff, we were all there over the weekend and having endless discussions about who do you think will be in, who do you think will be out. And I don't think one of us, between us three and all the people we were having a beer with and having dinner with and at the stadium with, would have gone, firstly, I'm not sure Slade's going to make it, or I wouldn't have Henry Slade in the squad. But maybe, Steve, is he one of those that once he's not in the squad, you start going, well, do you know what, actually, I can kind of see why.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, first of all, he has been a fabulous player. Over the years, he started off obviously as a fly half. That was his big métier. That was his place in life. But he's one of those people who's always in the team and never been dropped. And now and again, you think, well, actually, are they just put him in on a team sheet and then discuss the rest rather than go straight into what he does, because he is a great player. But I don't see lately that he's made himself his business to get involved in games so often. Look, when your centre partner always changes, like it did with Henry Slade, and when you're in the Eddie Jones confusion, you do feel sorry for him. But as you say, Will, I'm not... when I thought, hang on, Henry Slade, they've got to take him. But then you start thinking, you think, well, actually, possibly there are people who deserved it more.
Yeah.
He's played virtually every game since the last World Cup.
Yeah.
And I think... For me, there's probably one game in that period where he really stamped his authority on it. South Africa, when they beat South Africa here, him and Marcus Smith dovetailed.
21 or November.
21, and he had a couple of outstanding games in 19 over in Dublin, where he scored twice. But also his tactical kicking drove Ireland to distraction. It was brilliant, and he came in for the World Cup quarter final against Australia, played really well. And actually, people forget he played pretty much all the second half of the All Blacks semi final at fullback.
Yeah,
but I think there's loads of layers to this. In my piece today, I compared him to Mark Ramprakash, who, when I was growing up, I used to love watching Ramps play for Middlesex. As a Middlesex fan, I'd go and summer holidays, just sit at Lord's in the grandstand and just watch him compile century after century, desperate for him to bring that authority onto the Test cricket stage. And he never quite did. And he retired with an average of 27, I think. And I always felt it was such a shame that he never translated that class that he had onto the Test arena. And I feel that Henry Slade is a bit the same. You watch him play for Exeter and he's this smooth, classy, beautiful rugby player, but he's never managed to grab a Test match consistently. But I think there are elements to that. I feel part of it's his character. Now, obviously, I don't profess to know the guy that well, but Eddie Jones made him a vice-captain at one point, and that was to try and encourage a guy who always seems to me to be quite shy to come out of himself. And I felt that, Steve, you're right. There was a revolving kind of midfield dynamic, which is always tricky. But I also felt that when he was playing outside Owen Farrell, who's such a naturally domineering character, he almost didn't back himself to stand up for himself. And he was almost a little subservient to Farrell. Then he had those days when it was Ford, Farrell, Slade. And he was like the third wheel of this creative axis and ended up having to chuck the ball up, which is not him at all. So it's not all his fault. I'm not, a lot of it's character, a lot of it's circumstance. And I just feel the same actually about as I did with Ramprakash, that there's a guy of such obvious talent. It's never quite translated over 50 plus caps onto the test stage.
I'd say, Alex, I totally agree with that. But what I would say is, in terms of the epitaph on, not the epitaph, let's hope he carries on playing for England for many years to come. But the epitaph on his World Cup admission for me is that didn't quite burst through enough on his own, using his own ability. But B, never really had the environment created for him in which he could have been brilliant. So it's sad.
That's
true. So just to nail down the stats on this, and Russ Petty, the guy who's an incredible on Twitter with all these things, told us yesterday, he quote tweeted your piece, Alex, and said, since 2020 for England, the most starts wearing number 13, Slade, the second most starts at 12, Slade, the most to match squad appearances by a back, Slade, 30 out of 37. So in that sense, it is one of the old stages getting dropped, really. Like, he's not an old man, but he's been a key part of this England setup, at least for a decade nearly.
So when we say he is one of those players who we've all assumed would be there because he's been a mainstay in the squad, and the reason it's a shock, even if we feel that he hasn't really taken Test rugby by the scruff of the neck, the reason it's a shock is because he's always been there. And to go from being in the starting 15 to outside of the 33 is a hugely bold call from Steve Borthwick, and to bring in a guy, Joe Marchant, who for that entire period has been on the fringes, to the point where he signed for Stade Francais for next season because he didn't think he had an international future anymore. He was one of, I think, two who, no, maybe three, because I think George Martin played well, who came out of the defeat in Cardiff.
Lewis Ludlam, the other one?
Him, Lewis Ludlam and George Martin came out of that game with their reputation in heart. Some of the angles he cut onto Marcus Smith were beautiful. He brings the versatility of being able to play on the wing as well, and that is a hallmark of this squad, right? It's, if you're not, there's some specialists, and then pretty much everybody else outside of the front row nine need to be able to and can play somewhere else. That's what Borthwick has put a huge amount of stock in, that and power.
So here's a debating point for you two, maybe across the forwards and the backs. Is it a little bit, and I was talking to someone about this yesterday, and they were saying it looks to me a team of Swiss Army knives, and also a sort of jack of all trades, master of none type squad. So like, if you're looking at the forwards, you can say across Atoji, Chesser, Martin, Ribbons, Laws, Ludlam, they can all play multiple positions. And then across the backs, Farrell, 10-12, Tuilagi and Lawrence can play either centre, Marchant can play centre and wing, Watson can play both wings, fullback, Daly can play both wings, fullback, centre, same with Malins. Like, it's a lot of lacking in specialists and loads of versatility. And maybe is that because almost a third of the squad has had to go on 9 front row and 6 halfbacks?
I'm afraid, I've never agreed with that. I mean, it started with, I think it was Brian Ashton and then Clive Woodward saying, look, it doesn't matter these days about the number on your back. Well, actually, it does, because when this plays fluid and you're in the sixth phase, maybe it doesn't matter anymore. I still think rugby's a specialist game. You've got to have people who can play in different positions. I think they've gone over the top with it. It's not as if to draft someone in, they're going to be jet-lagged when they come. You've got to dump them on the Eurostar.
They'll be there in the afternoon.
It's different in New Zealand, but I think there are too many Swiss Army knives there. Of which I think Marchant is probably one. Great wholehearted player, but is he going to win the World Cup for England? I don't think so.
The thing is, and we're speaking here before Steve Borthwick has given his explanations, but I know that he'll talk about the concussion stand-down period now being potentially 12 days, the growing and enormous likelihood that England are going to lose players to suspension through this World Cup. Every team will. So he's got that at the front of his mind, as a need to ensure that he's got the requisite cover. Now, someone like Joe Marchant, who I think is pretty clearly the last piece of the squad jigsaw to be slotted into place, I can see him being in the number 23 on the bench because he can cover. I don't mind those players being versatile and able to cover different positions because they're on the outside of the match 23, likely. But you mentioned to Ollie Chesham and George Martin, they can play lock or six. But I don't mind it, providing that their primary position, they are of test standard. So England need hefty, powerful, tight head locks. And as you described last week, the sheer size of George Martin, Ollie Chesham, an incredible unit, the same. They're going as England's tight head locks. If they need to deputise at six, they can. They're going as tight head lock. And Elliot Daly, another one, for me, he's going as England's left wing. He can deputise at fullback if necessary, if they lose Freddie Stewart. Deputise outside centre if really necessary, but I just don't think he's been tested there enough at test level. Provided he's of test standard at his primary position, it's then a real benefit that they can cover elsewhere. Because Steve is right, there are going to be concussions where players could miss two games. There are going to be red cards where players can miss three or four games.
Well, let's go through some of the bigger selections in a second, but just let's pause and maybe celebrate a couple of the guys who've done exceptionally well to get in. So, like, Theo Dan, extraordinary story that, isn't it? He started this last season at Amptill on loan. Probably, with all due respect, no one had heard of him until May. And then he's in the England World Cup squad. That's a hell of an effort from him.
I think if you saw Sarri's towards the end of last season, you know why he's there, though.
Yeah.
He's just a storm force.
I mean, they need to practice his line-out throwing on the basis of Saturday night, but it's a bit of a Ben Stokes pick, that, where he talked about Mo and Ali, why he brought him back into the Ashes squad. And he was talking about, I've picked him for what he can do on his best days.
Yeah.
And that's what you want from Theo Dan, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Amazing job for him to get in. The other one you'd mentioned is Ollie Chessum, who had a fractured dislocation of his ankle in March at the end of the Six Nations. And as we spoke about last week, he was one of the standouts in a pretty poor tournament there. And he's now made the squad. Brilliant effort to get back, where at the time we thought that's going to be a long injury, he's not going to be back for September. So there, and then Marchant, obviously the other one, of, as you say, at the back end of Eddie Jones, he chose to take a contract in France because he thought, I'm not in this picture at all, and I wonder whether he might regret it. But he's going to a World Cup now, and then he can earn a packet in France. So good on him.
Chessum, as far as I'm concerned, is a vital player. I would have always had him in his squad. After half an hour on Saturday, lads, we were very close to the ground in the press box. In fact, we couldn't see much, as usual. But what we could see was how vast England were.
It was blessed relief at times, to be
fair. Well, I turned my seat round at one stage. But we could see that these massive lads, they were massive. They looked much bigger than Wales. But when it came down to it, after about 20 minutes, 24 minutes, think, well, they're smashing the ball up. They're actually not doing anything. They're not playing any rugby. And what Chessum can do, which I think some of the others can't, is Chessum would have understood, taken the ball up and then once or twice just tried something different with it, offloaded or passed behind or something like that.
I think if England,
I think he's got a rugby ability which they need, because they've got the size and power. Have they got a nouse in their game up front?
I think if England go into that Pumas game on September the 9th, and the Pumas will be fit and physical and aggressive.
Yeah.
And England can start with, say, Itoje and Chessum. And then have George Martin to bring his heft off the bench. You're retaining that power.
Yeah, sure.
For the full 80. Like, I think that's a really important combination for England, actually.
Sure. I think George, it's a sort of position, almost like rugby league. You could actually bring him on for 20 minutes or something like that, you know. You don't even have to keep him on, because he's a massive bloke. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like the sun had gone in when he was running up the field. But he's got to have a little bit more than he's got, in my opinion.
So, should we talk about now the two, I would say, most important members of the England squad? Jamie George and Billy Vunipola.
Yeah.
So, if either of those get injured, either in the next few weeks or at the World Cup, England are all over the place in the forwards.
In every 33, there's going to be a skinny area. Like, last World Cup, it was 31, which meant there are even more. This time, effectively, they've added a tight head, added a scrum half. They've got to be areas where you can't pack it with specialists. And Borthwick, through choice at number 8, has gone with one specialist number 8.
So just to be clear for everyone listening who hasn't seen it, Tom Willis is not in, Alex Dunbrand is not in, and they're basically using Lewis Ludlam's cover across the whole back row, and possibly Tom Curry if they're desperate. But Billy's on his own.
Whereas at hooker, the circumstance is one that Borthwick has largely inherited. There's one or two others he might have looked at. Tom Dunn, real sort of set-piece, mauling. But really, he's got Jamie George, British and Irish Lion, caps of what? 80-odd caps?
Just below, yeah.
Just below 70 odd caps. And then a gap to Jack Walker, who's got 3 caps, who went on a summer tour last year to Australia and wasn't used, won 3 caps in the Six Nations, a grand total of about 35 minutes in over 5 tests, 2 of which he wasn't even used in, wasn't trusted to even come off the bench. And then behind him, Theo Dan, who came off the bench for his debut, who's real, like I said, a kind of shout Brit style hooker in the loose, really raw in the set piece, but in immense potential and really exciting and great for him to be there. But Jamie George will have to play a lot of minutes at this World Cup, because
at least to start of the tournament.
Yeah, in the big games, so Argentina, probably Japan, and then
Samoa. If England have won the two games, they're going to go through, aren't they? So then they could mess around against.
He's going to have to
Samoa
play a lot
Chile.
Of minutes and not get injured.
Yeah, and also Jamie is one of those guys. I mean, we keep on going on about the 0-3 team, in which they were all leaders. This team hasn't got a whole team of leaders, and Jamie's desperately needed for that as well.
He is.
As far as it goes with Billy, one thing I've learned over the last six or 7 weeks is the advance of recovery and treatment. Because I sat down with Billy some weeks ago. He said, next Thursday at 2 o'clock, I'll be having my final session of this, that, and the other. In 2 days' time, I'll be jogging. 4 days after that, I'll be running. And he said, on this date, I'll be ready to play. And he was dead right all the time. So to be fair to Billy, we think, oh, he's a bit overweight and all that. He's really applied himself and deserves to be in. But I'm afraid I don't believe that Lewis Ludlam is anything like an apt replacement should Billy fall over. I would have taken Tom Willis, definitely, because he's the sort of guy that could have really, really blossomed out there. So I'm a bit dodgy with that. And it's amazing, because the guy with the biggest injury crisis coming into it is now the guy who hasn't got a backup. So not very happy with that.
I think if Billy gets an injury that rules him out of the World Cup, Tom Willis is the one who has to come in.
Yeah, no, sure.
Alex Dombrandt,
no.
What a wonderful Premiership player, attacker, playing over the road at Quinn's suits him perfectly. He started all six games under Steve Borthwick and was nearly dropped twice and now has been. He just doesn't fit what England need. I think it's a shame for Tom Willis. He actually had a rib cartilage issue in the Six Nations. It's just come a bit too soon for him. I think the whole circumstance with Borthwick, where he's trying to fast track everything, he doesn't really have time
where he
has a decision, which he didn't really have at hooker. Mm. Doesn't really have time to develop players now.
To pick the green option, basically. Yeah,
yeah. And I think with Ludlam, you talk about leadership of Jamie George. Lewis Ludlam is the Northampton Saints captain, and I actually think he's really important in this squad. As someone said to me yesterday, if England have to go up against Africa, Ludlam will get smashed. It's like, well, if Ludlam's going to get smashed, then Dombrandt's going to get smashed. So the only one who isn't is Willis. And I think for understandable, if slightly disappointing reasons, it's come a bit too soon for him. So I think they back... You know, there are other options. They could play a dynamic Ben Earl off number eight. Mm. They could play Tom Curry off number eight, which they have done in the past. I just think, basically, before we got any intelligence yesterday about what the squad was, I was planning to write, on the basis that, in case we didn't hear anything, I was going to write a piece about what my World Cup squad was going to be. And I'd come to the conclusion, as we got on that train in Cardiff, that to get the right balance, Lewis Ludlam would be my backup at number eight.
Okay.
So just to round off the ins and outs, let's go through the outs, I suppose. So we've mentioned a few of them, but Jamie Blamire, Johnny Hill, Tom Pearson, who made his debut on Saturday in Cardiff, Tom Willis, Alex Dombrandt, Henry Slade, as you all know now, Guy Porter, Joe Thokonosiga, Johnny May and Caden Murley are the ones that are out. And before we move on and talk about some other teams and things like that, should we just do a little note on the match? Look back at Saturday and look forward to the Saturday coming. I think we'll all agree that while Wales were very good, England were desperate. But I suppose we see the context of it now, that basically none of that team were going to the World Cup. But maybe the point I was going to make about the week coming is that they've really now got to see the first 15 twice. They've got to play them as much as they can, injuries aside, here against Wales next Saturday, and then in Dublin the following week. They can't be messing about thinking of the fringe lads, because Argentina first game is in now a month's time. There's no easy start like there was at the last World Cup.
I agree. Well, also when they play the two strong teams, they've got to do a little bit better than dominating 65% of the match territory and not scoring a single try. And what we haven't spoken about yet this year, what we haven't spoken about today is their ability to get themselves on the board in any way apart from penalties. And now it's going to be really A, they need a scrum half who doesn't kick the box it all the time. I know Danny McKay was playing under orders. B, Farrell and Ford between them, or whoever it is, has got to be inspirational. And in honour of the guy they checked out in midfield, the new midfield has got to play bloody well and start being more creative. And there's got to be more of a creative tie-up with the back row, and the forwards have got to, you know, get the ball away out of contact now and again rather than trying to smash someone. So far as I'm concerned, I mean, I don't care on the weekend if England concedes six tries for defence. That can come another day. We have to see England with a freshness, a boldness, and an ability to score tries. And the team they picked will all be out there. So Mr. Farrell, etc. It's up. And another thing they've got to do is they have to find a way to attack from the back, because the fullback is one of the best players in the year you'd ever see, but not so good at initiating attacks.
So, sure, do you mean, yeah.
So they've got to... I mean, as far as I'm concerned this week, they've got to show something. A, because they have anyway, and B, to get Twickenham back in the game.
The question without Henry Slade is, what does that look like? What does England's first 15 look like, certainly in the back division? If you think of Owen Farrell at Saracens, he's got the playmaking foil of Alex Goode playing from fullback as his second. The team have a second outlet there. Yeah. Plus Lazowski, who's perfectly capable of
and
doing
Daly,
that himself.
A lot when
and
he's
Daly.
Fit.
So Steve's point about creativity out in the back, I think, will come from Daly. He'll be picked at left wing, but I think if you've got Daly, Watson and Stewart, there's a lot of interchange there. Put Stewart where the high ball's going to be and put Daly where he can affect things offensively.
He could play like Willie LaRue a little bit.
I think he could do. But then it's 10, 12, 13. And if you remove Slade from the equation, your options are route one, Full Metal Jacket, Farrell, Manu, Ollie Lawrence, who is not just a thumper. There's way more to him than that. He's been a bit pigeonholed as just a kind of Manu light. Or not lighter than Manu, but you know what I mean. Second Manu. But that is so... Even with Daly on the wing, I think you're telegraphing exactly what you're going to do. And I don't think Argentina are going to be too worried about big lads running at them. There's got to be a bit more
to it.
They'll
be welcoming it.
They'd love it more than what Marcus Smith talked about what England want to do, which is have everyone running at angles and confuse them. In which case, they're going to end up playing Farrell at 12.
Which you can hear everyone around England going, oh my God,
so then the conversation is it Marcus Smith and Farrell, which is an experiment. I say it's still an experiment. Eddie Jones spent a year trying to make it work and it didn't. Or is it Ford, Farrell, Manu, which was exactly what England had at the last World Cup, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. That England team that made the World Cup final was the youngest team in the professional era to make a World Cup final. So it shouldn't be a surprise that a lot of them are still in the team. But that combination hasn't been used for 4 years, pretty much, because Ford was around in the COVID Six Nations, but really wasn't around towards the end of it because they focused on Smith. So I just think taking Slade out of it makes that conversation really interesting, and for me puts Farrell as a live contender to play 12.
Yeah,
it does, but if he doesn't, I mean, I wouldn't play him there, but you're right, he is now a contender. These are international rugby players, England's international team. Surely they've got to trust someone who's a touch player or a little bit like a touch player, see what they can do. And actually, you know, Anthony Watson, great player, tends to stay on his wing. Now, in the absence of a real attacking fullback, Anthony Watson should drop back and take some of those high kicks, even if he's not so solid, because he and Daly, they have got talents, but not if they stuck out on the wing on the left and right wing. I think Daly, it's like England on Saturday, it'd be like watching Harry Kane with Tottenham. None of them can attack, but they have got one bloke who can and scores all the goals.
And he's off to the Bayern Munich.
Well, let's not go on with that now. But I think Daly's one of those. I think Daly, frankly, is the key player on the weekend to see what he can do.
Well, let's see what happens on the weekend. England have got their squad now. We know the 33 men, injuries aside and all that. But why don't we spend a few minutes talking about some of the other nations around the world who've played over the weekend before we wrap up and move on.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Right, lads, so we've done loads on England, which is absolutely fair enough, but we should do 5 minutes on Wales just because, Steve, it looks like Warren Gatland's doing it again.
Yeah.
A bunch of players that maybe aren't household names, but blimey, they look fit and clever and full of nous and intelligence, yeah. Didn't they, on Saturday?
They got a footballing ability there. I mean, people have always said that there's a native footballing ability there, that the tens know what they're supposed to do, you know, in their heads rather than on a coaching thing. Sometimes that's right, sometimes it's not. I just thought that to have Wainwright, who's had a really, really low-key couple of seasons, back at the same time as Gatland comes back, and Gatland is the man who discovered Faletau and Wainwright. To have those two back was a huge boost. I think that second rows, who've had question marks against them, played well. Not sure about the scrum. They were a little bit tubby, those front rowers, bless them, but they did okay. But I don't think that, I think that a lot of that was down to the referee bailing them out. But I just think that they knew how to do it at the end. They had more rugby ability in them, more finishing power. George North was probably halfway back to his best, and the third choice fly half, Costello, I thought, did really well. So what Wales needed is this needed something to get them going before the World Cup. I mean, I'm not so sure the Gats would be that bothered about the other three games, but you know, if he brings in some of his first team for Twickenham, that'll be interesting too. So at least we know that they're not going to be complete rubbish, because some of the stuff was good.
Remember in the there's a corridor at the Principality Stadium at the bottom of the stairs that come down from the changing room, and we spoke to Steve Borthwick there, and then he left a few minutes later, furrowed brow, heading for the team bus. About 10 minutes after that, Gatland came sort of breezing down the stairs with a beer in his hand and just looked over and went, "We're fitter than them," with a wicked smile on his face, and walked off.
Cheshire cat.
But they were.
I take it he didn't mean the coaching group.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's taken on Richard Wigglesworth, Kevin Sinfield.
Let's say, "Hold my beer a minute while I talk to you." Yeah.
But they were, and you mentioned Aaron Wainwright there, who I thought was outstanding, and it makes you wonder what happened to him under Pivac, and where that, you know, that guy who was so good at the 19 World Cup coming again, which is really exciting and really important for Wales. And then, of course, Jack Morgan, who will forever have the iconic tackle on Tom Pearson, the sort of George North tackle on Israel Folau, the Gavin Henson tackle on Matthew Tate. It was in that sort of genre. But beyond that, he was just immense. And you talk about this innate footballing ability that Wales have. They also have this extraordinary, I guess, conveyor belt of open side flankers. You know, Sam Warburton was at the game, I think.
Yeah.
Who would have been looking down from the stand on this young kid, just been made captain, just before a World Cup, coming out, and his all-round performance was just outstanding. And it's performances like that from individuals that Gatland can build something around.
Yes.
And we all know his track record of building these things quickly. I don't think you can quite compare him to England based on that, because that England team, half of them aren't even going to the World Cup.
No, sure.
But your instinct says that he's made more of an impact in pretty much the same amount of time than Borthwick has managed so far with England.
Well, one thing I am worried about for Jack Morgan is that his ear's going to fall off.
Ooh.
It looks horrible, yeah. Isn't it? Like, we were sitting next to each other, Alex, in the press box at the Principality Stadium, and we had the sort of Amazon TV guys were sitting in front of us, and they had quite a big screen, which was quite helpful because sometimes you can't see it with the overhang of the stand in Cardiff. But at the Anthem, we were like, the circulation's gone to half his ear. It's going purple. So maybe his ears are well cupped out, but he's certainly going.
Maybe the best ears since Graham Rowntree retired.
Yeah,
then.
Well, there you go. We better touch on the proud Scots as well. They were celebrating a pretty good victory over the French. I suppose, as Stuart Barnes was writing in the paper on Monday today for us, quite a lot of context to that win, though. French second slash third team, mm-hmm. really. But if you're Scotland, you're going, we picked our best team, we beat France. So there you go. You can beat what's in front of you.
And I guess one of the big learnings from... I hate that phrase. One of the big things you can learn from that game was what happened to Xander Fagerson. He went in for a genuine clear out. He didn't come flying in head first, but there was a collision head to head, and he's sent off via the bunker, which is new, and he's got sent off for the similar thing, I think, two years ago.
Wales, yeah.
So he's gonna get, that would be a 6-week entry, probably reduced by a game. He's looking at a 4-game ban. Now it wasn't vicious, it would be counted as reckless, but it wasn't out there to hurt somebody. He was out there trying to effect a clear out on someone who was quite upright himself. Just got it a bit wrong. Now that happens in game one of the World Cup.
Yeah.
For Scotland, that's probably your entire tournament over.
Yeah.
You can't replace him in the squad.
Yeah.
So if you want to bring a third prop out, you have to send someone else home, presumably. It's just...
It's
a warning to everyone that this World Cup is going to be really impacted by small incidents.
Just quickly,
also,
too.
Because the second TMO system, because it was the first time we'd seen it in Scotland working, I think the guy was bound to get his red card.
I agree.
Just quickly, too, let's see what ban he does get. But Scotland's first World Cup game is South Africa.
Yeah.
And you don't want to lose your best tight head for that, do you?
No. So I think
if he's banned for 4 games, he's a bit like Hartley in 2015.
Do you take him? Yeah,
you may not take him.
But there we go.
But just say what I took out of that game. Well, is because we saw it in the media box. A, Scotland did come back to win, and good luck to them. They've got something there. And B, all right, France lost it in the second quarter. My God, they got 4 or 5 players there. You could slot straight in to the big team. Wocky for one.
Just on Scotland's comeback, having Darcy Graham back in that team is massive for them, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's quality wing.
Yeah.
So two other results that we should better mention before we do our God or Goddess of the Week. Australia losing late to New Zealand, but playing much better. And Eddie Jones coming out saying, not only do I think we're going to win, we will win the World Cup now. Like, it's confirmed, so we might as well not bother.
Yeah. Australia won it. Full All Blacks team,
have you cancelled your trip? I've cancelled. I'm not going to that now. It's just one-sided.
It's amazing because there's going to be 8 teams that are going to win this World Cup, aren't there? So it might be like the first shared octagonal tournament ever.
It's going to be a major presentation ceremony. All 8
It's going to take forever.
I haven't watched the game. It was an afternoon kickoff in Dunedin, I think.
Yeah, 3 a.m. Yeah.
Looking at how it went, I can sort of imagine that Australia started fast. They were 17-0.
Yeah, 17-0. Yeah.
But then...
Second All Black team, mind.
All Black second team dominated the next hour and won it at the end. And I think Eddie will always talk up that team because he has to. But if you get edged out by the All Black second team, I think that does show how far you've still got to travel.
The other result was that South Africa put 30-odd on Argentina, which, I don't know...
They trailed at half-time.
Yeah, but they came through again and won.
They came through again,
they're just going to be... bloody good at the World
Cup.
They are
going to be good. Do you know, I didn't think their team's so similar to the one that won last time. I thought they'd never carry on, but it looks like they may well do. Yeah. Simple as that.
I think that they beat England here in November. They beat Australia at the start of the Rugby Championship, and they've landed some blows on New Zealand and South Africa.
Yeah.
They haven't lasted the 80, but they've landed some blows. And that will worry England, I think, because England aren't of the level of South Africa or New Zealand.
Yeah. Do you actually think, lads, that... Now we've had 2 weeks, a week of these games, and then we've had the Southern Hemisphere stuff. It is getting quite exciting, isn't it?
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
It's building up now. It's building up.
Oh, we've had the Samoa squad was announced on Sunday.
Yeah.
With Christian Liliafano in it, Stephen Luatua in it, Charles Famuina in it.
Titi Lamasitele.
USA. All re-qualified. Like,
bloody brilliant.
They're brilliant. Fiji and that Australia-Wales group. Those games against Fiji are going to be awesome.
All Black squads
even,
out as well.
Even Georgia against Australia. You remember what Georgia did to Wales
in
Cardiff?
Yeah,
set their scrum on the Wallabies. My God, what can... You know, so it really is... it is getting exciting.
Well, let's round up now because we better move on because Steve Borthwick will be coming and chatting to us soon. But right. Should we do a quick...
Do we have to go to that?
Yeah, we're going to go to it. Come on. We're going to do a quick God or Goddess of the Week and then we'll leave you guys to it. So I'm going to go with mine first. Mentioned him already. Jack Morgan, epic, tackling, yeah. Jackling, all over the place. Wales have found another seven, and it's ridiculous they keep doing it. So he's my God of the Week. Steve?
My God of the Week would be Aaron Wainwright, because Aaron Wainwright adds something. He's got a certain magic about him, and he's really compelling. So welcome back, Aaron, and wherever you've been, and hope you keep going.
Well, you've got anyone left? No. I'll pick Jack Morgan out of the two of them, but both made valid cases. I think they both had a big week, and that is massive for Wales.
Well, there you go. That has been the pod. We're live at Twickenham. We'll be back again next week, as ever, and for every week until there's a World Cup winner and then beyond through the season and everything else. But from a sunny Twickenham, goodbye to Steve.
Bye. Thanks for listening.
And goodbye to Alex.
Thank you.
And goodbye from me too. Thanks for listening. And this episode was produced on the road by Alfie Reynolds, as ever. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.